This is CliffCentral.com.
Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
Sanbonani, I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is The Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Alongside me today, as usual, Lionel Makokotlela. Welcome, Lionel.
Welcome, Gary. Thank you very much, and welcome to our guest today.
Yep. I've been away from studio for a week or two, and I've asked my researcher, Benji, to put a show together, and I think he's got something good today. What's it all about, Benj?
Yeah, so today we got a two-part show. The first part, I got hold of a family who are desperately looking for answers. Their brother went missing about 9 to 12 months ago, so we're going to have a chat with them and find out their story. And then obviously get help from the listeners. Maybe they can assist with this. And in terms of help, part two, we're going to speak to a guy called Romeo Dickerson. He is from Above the Curve. He's got an app that you press a button and help will be on your way. And the reason he contacted us, because 3 weeks ago we spoke to Jill Linsall, whose daughter was in a cupboard while they were ransacking her house and didn't know what to do. She called 10111 and they didn't really respond to how they should have. So she's going to give us an update on the 10111 story.
Good. Well done, Benji Scheinberg, my researcher. Thank you for that, Benji. Lionel, yeah, this is going to be a good one, I think.
It's going to be very interesting. But however, the mere fact that somebody went missing, that is actually heartbreaking. And I hope that we do get the end results where we've actually reunited the family with their loved one.
Yeah, Ilse McKenzie is our main guest today, and she's here with members of her family. They haven't seen their brother, as Benji said, for, what's it, more than a year?
9 months.
Is it 9 months now? Yeah, tragic, absolutely tragic. You grew up very close, didn't you? Come right up to the mic, Ilse.
Very much close together. We were 11 months apart, and because he was very ill, I was always there with him. We were in school together, and I was always there for him, always in accidents, in hospitals, because of his illness.
What age are you now, Ilse?
I'm 56.
Okay, so your brother was a year younger, you say?
Yes, now older
than you.
11 months.
Okay, how many in your family?
4 members.
Where did you grow up exactly?
In Triumph, in the police houses.
Okay, your dad was a policeman?
My father was a policeman.
Did you learn much? Did he come home and discuss with you?
No, he didn't speak anything about his job. He never discussed his job with us.
How many other brothers or sisters did you have?
Another brother, eldest brother, also a policeman. Yeah. And then my sister Ria. She lives in Free State.
Okay, so you grew up in police barracks, you say?
Police houses.
Police houses. In Triumph?
In Triumph, yeah.
Yeah. You went to the same school, you and your brother?
Yes, we went to DF Milan High School.
You were telling me that at some time in his life, he had a terrible accident.
Yeah, he was in Standard 7 when he fell out of a tree and he landed on his feet on the street and his kidney burst. And he was in a coma for 2 months. Mm. And he had to start walking and talking and everything like a baby. He had to do all of that. And for about 2 years, he couldn't concentrate. But slowly but surely, as the years went by, he recovered. But he couldn't write in his matric or anything. He wrote his matric, I think, 20 years after he left school.
Did he function kind of normally on the sports fields, or was he not able to
not at all. He was a bit
so he was lagging behind
before the accident, but after that, no. And when he had his accident, I couldn't really concentrate in school because I was just always crying. And that year, I nearly failed.
Mm. It was to see your brother go through that kind of trauma. Was he able to control his bowel movements?
Not for a while. My father and them had him in the room with the two girls for him to ring a bell. Mm. And then once they took him out just to test him, but he fell off the bed and my dad said, no, he must come back to the girls in the room where we can watch over him. But he recovered. He recovered. He was in a wheelchair for a while, but he recovered after 2-3 years. He recovered, and then he started working at the railway. Then he went to Joburg General Hospital. Then he started working in the Southrand Hospital, where he worked for 27 years.
What kind of work did he do there?
Well, first he was a porter, and when he wrote his matric, then he became an admin clerk.
Did you remain close through the years?
I always went to visit him. I was always caring about him, worried about him. At that point in time, my mother was alive, and she always said, when I was working at Nedbank, she said, "My darling, don't you want to put some money in for your brother?" And I always put in money for him, and I never took it back because I know he didn't have.
Yeah, his name was Pitt. Pitt. Well, his name is Pitt.
No, well, he's got a full name, but we call him
Pitt. You called him Pitt.
Pitt, yeah.
He never married?
Never married.
Why?
Until the age of 37. He couldn't get a girlfriend because he had girlfriends, but he couldn't keep them long because he walked like a drunk person. And he once said to me, "I can't keep a girlfriend because of the accident I'm walking, like in to the left all the time."
He was always a bit unsteady on his feet.
Unsteady because of the accident, yes.
Yeah. So girls thought he was a bit peculiar.
Yeah, and they thought, you know, there was something wrong. And he was very aggressive after the
So he never managed to have kids either?
No, he couldn't have kids at all. No kids.
Sometime when he was in his 30s, 37 or so, he met a lady, didn't he?
He met her at about 36.
Yeah.
And then they got in that year, they got engaged. And then I spoke to her about his illness.
What was her name?
Patricia Lewis, and then she married, obviously, Hatton after a year.
And where did they live?
They lived in Turfontein.
Okay. Did she have children?
She had 4 children of her own, but her husband passed away.
Yeah. So who was looking after her children?
The two younger ones stayed with Pitt and Patricia, which were married now, and the two eldest ones were with the granny in Eldorado Park.
Did he adopt these kids or did he?
No. Never adopted them.
Was there a close bond between him and her children?
There was a close bond between him and his children when they were young. Yeah. Between Chandra, Angie and Pitt, there was a close bond. Especially Angie's, Chandra and her, she had a baby afterwards while she was in school. There was a close bond with her, Kelly Ann.
Yeah. So he lived as man and wife with this woman for many years.
For 20 years.
In that time, you remained in contact with your brother,
Pitt.
Yeah.
All the time.
Were they Huisvriende? Did they come and visit you?
They visited us Christmas, Old Year's, birthdays. I went to him. And we were always together at my mom's place.
Did you accept her?
Yes, I accepted her.
Yeah.
I accepted her. I'm the only one in the family that actually accepted her.
Was she good to him? That's the main thing.
Very good to him in her way.
And she took him on despite his medical problems, didn't she?
Yes, she knew about his problems, and that's I warned her before she married him that of his problems, and she said it's acceptable to her. So that didn't worry her.
Financially, he was earning a wage as a working in the hospital, nothing fantastic.
Not a wonderful salary.
But at least he brought a bit of money home. She didn't marry him for his money, that's the issue.
No.
There wasn't money.
No.
And she also worked.
She worked at Macro, on and off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You told me they lived in Eldorado Park for a while. Is that before?
No, that was after they medical boarded him at the Southrand Hospital after 27 years. They always used to stay in Turfontein.
Okay.
He had his own house.
So you say they asked him to leave after 27 years because he wasn't...
No, what happened is he had a scooter. He had a scooter. And when he lost his house, they lived into a place in Forest Hill where it's the rooms.
Yeah.
And all these children went also hiring rooms there with them. Mm. Now all these children are grown-ups. My brother did not have to look after them anymore. It's not his responsibility. He raised them to the age where they could have their own life.
Mm.
But they were always there for collecting and taking.
Taking what?
Money, stealing his stuff out of his place.
Why?
Small little things for drugs.
You saying that her children had a drug problem?
They had a drug problem. Not all of them, Chandra, I know. Not, but Angie and the two elders, yes.
Is it a fact? I mean, did everyone know they were pulling stuff out of the house?
Veronique is on the street.
I've done a show before with drug addicts, and I know that they'll take anything to feed the habit.
Anything, even pots. She takes pots.
I know they take pots. She takes anything just to get two rands.
She even took her mother's money and she put it in her shoe. Her mother's money out of her purse and put it in her shoe.
It's very tragic.
It's
happening more than we can believe.
It's a terrible problem in the area where they're living, where they live used to live. Mm. It was a big problem.
I interviewed a lady called Darylene James from El Dorado Park. She's a wonderful woman. She helps so many people, and she once invited our President Zuma to try and do something to clean up El Dorado Park. She's the lady. In fact, she may be someone, but we'll talk about her afterwards. Remind me, because she may be someone to try and help you with the problem that you have right now, but we're going to get there. So these three children, his stepchildren as such, were stealing out the house to feed the drug habit.
Yes.
Very, very sad.
Yeah.
There was really nothing left. They were just cleaning out the house.
They were cleaning out the house, and that's why he lost his house. He had to sell his house and to go and live in these rooms, in this little room. But then they all went, like he took the baggage with him. Not that he wanted to, but they forced their way into there. The mother, at that point in time, had no control about her children because of the problem that she had, the pain that she was in, for this chemicals eating her from inside. She was always drunk.
She was sickly as well.
She was sickly as well. So she drank to
get all in all, it was very tragic. His wife was an alcoholic and three of the children were drug addicts.
Drug addicts.
So life was very, very hard for him.
He had a very tough life. At the South Rand Hospital, everybody says, Pitt, we know what Pitt is going through. And they would not accept his resignation, sick or not. They said, no, we're not going to. We're not going to accept his he wants to resign because he doesn't feel well.
He was a hard worker, Pitt.
Very hard worker.
Never missed
the
day if he could.
But if he could help it, no. He used to. Then he had a scooter. He bought himself a little scooter. But in this place where he hired the room, they stole the scooter. Then he was forced to leave his job. Then they medical boarded him, and he got quite a bit of money. I don't know how much, but it was a couple of 100,000 rands. And after that, he died, and then my brother disappeared.
You can just feel the pain of what drugs can actually do to families and just killing the fiber.
Nobody's giving me answers. I went to make a missing case by Moffatview Police Station. I spoke to the Minister of Police.
Come forward, Ilse. Let's just try and...
I put him on pink, ladies, as a missing person.
Okay, let's try and work out what happened so we can try and piece it together. And maybe someone listening will have a great idea for you. So that's why we're here. Okay? Your brother was paid out a few hundred thousand rand.
Yeah.
What happened to that money? Did he invest it or what did he do with it?
No. That he wanted to leave his wife. And she phoned me and said to me that my brother is leaving his mother. And she phoned me 2 o'clock at night. And I don't have transport. And I had to phone my sister. And my sister came through. And then when we went there, my brother was sitting there and all his stuff was in his car. And then I said to him, Peter, how can you leave Pat without money? Then Patricia was sitting there. Then she said,
thank you for the tissues, darling.
But you're lying, Pat. I gave you 100,000 rand. And I paid 5,000 rand for the place in Klipspruit. So how can you lie to my sister and tell her I never gave you money? And then Angie jumped up and she said, Pete, I'm going to kill you for all your money. You won't leave here with 1 cent. And I said to my brother, get into your car and go to my sister in Belize because they are going to harm you.
Who said I'm going to kill you for your
Angie.
Money?
Angie.
That's one of the drug addict daughters?
Yes.
She said it in front of you?
She said it in front of me,
and your
sister and her mother.
Yeah.
And then
no, I was not there.
I attacked her. Yeah. I attacked her. I said, how can you say that to my brother? Then I said to him, get in your car and go.
They knew he had this money that they wanted to get their hands on.
She said she's going to kill him for this money. He won't leave there.
Mm. So you said, well, you get out of town quickly.
Yes, I said leave. And then he left. Mm. He left and he went to my sister in Belize.
Yes.
He bought his car, his blue Golf. And there in Belize, he bought a little dog, Buddhas. And then my eldest brother got a heart attack and I never had transport to go to Florissant Clinic. And I phoned there and then Pete said, okay, you'll come through to take me to my brother in Flora Clinic. But he wouldn't make it. And when he arrived here, it was about 10 o'clock, the hooter blew. That was the last time I saw my brother.
Did he come with his dog?
He came with his dog. He said,
so
I've got
was
my
he a
dog.
Bit homeless with his dog?
He was always in his car. He was living in
was
his car.
Was he sleeping with his dog in yes. the car? What was very, what is he living on? What was he?
Well, my sister, when she told me that when she was there, he used to buy all these luxuries, like in bread and cookies and cold drinks.
But
and
they'd cleaned him out. They must have stolen as much as possible.
Yeah.
Did they know where the money was, in which bank it was?
Yes, they knew. They knew.
So he was left, ultimately, sleeping homelessly in his car with his dog.
Yes.
You know, I often see these things, especially in the States, you see a lot of homeless people. I've just come back and with the beautiful dogs. I know that people walk past and feed the dogs because no one wants, you know, if a man wants to deal with his own life in whatever way he desires, that's his concern, but you don't do it to an animal.
But the problem is, you know what, when he came back, he still had his dog.
Yeah.
And then after that, when he went now back to Eldorado Park, Klipspruit, where he was living, where Pat was living, he went back to her, and I didn't want him to go there, neither did my sister, because we knew what was going to happen there. We knew what these children are doing to him. Then,
how could they get the money out of the bank? Did they have his passwords? How did they know to get their money, his money?
Yeah, I'm sure they manipulated him because they first phoned me to tell me that their mother passed away in Joburg Gin.
So his lady friend or his wife of
no,
many
his
years
wife, his wife.
Of many years
his
passed
wife
away.
Passed away. That was his wife.
So there was no one left.
I've got a tombstone. It's Patricia Hartung. She was legally married to him. She passed away.
Yes.
She's apparently, according to them, she choked in water. After she swallowed the camera, she asked him for water, and after she drank the water, she died.
Did it sound a bit suspicious to
you? Yes, to me it sounded very suspicious. When I asked them, well, why don't you do anything about this? Why don't you go and report the hospital? No, these things happen. So I said, these things happen? Okay, these things happen. And then I left it at that. Then they said they're coming to fetch me because nobody else wanted to go to Eldorado Park for her funeral. Mm. But I said, I'll be there for my brother. Then, and he wanted me to be there. He said, please, I need my sister here. Then I was waiting, Now I'm talking to her on the phone and WhatsApping her. I don't know where my brother is. And nobody fetches me for the funeral. I'm dressed. I'm waiting. I'm WhatsApping you. She's reading the WhatsApps. She's reading it, but she's not answering me. She's not answering me. Then 2 days after that, I said, you know what, Angie, you wasted my time. My time for getting ready to go to my sister-in-law's funeral. You people never fetch
me. It's her own mother's funeral.
It's her own mother's funeral.
Where was Pitt then?
I don't know, because my brother never believed in the South.
Let's talk to is it your sister?
That's my sister. My brother didn't believe.
Please come forward. What is your name?
My name is Ria.
Yes. You are a sister of yours?
I'm the elder sister, yes.
Okay. What do you know of this?
Well, after Pat passed away, he bought a Wendy house in Eldorado Park, and he went to stay there. And but like my sister said, they didn't pick her up to go to the funeral. And then I spoke to him about a week after the funeral, and I just said something was wrong because it was like they didn't want us to speak to him. And then we never spoke to him again. And then in November, sometime in November, the daughter, I'm not sure which daughter, phoned my sister or whatever.
Yeah, she phoned me the 5th of December.
And she said that my brother they put him on the bus to go to Durban.
Is this nonsense?
That was nonsense. Because my brother had a car and he was ill and he couldn't help himself. He had to go to the toilet.
All the time.
All the time. Mm. And I don't believe that story. And I said, I believe something happened to him.
So now you sisters have lost a darling brother, right?
Yes,
you
yes,
are
yes.
convinced.
That's very
that was,
yeah.
that he's been murdered?
Yes,
I want my brother. I don't care. I want him.
Because the dog he bought there when he was there by me, he was fishing there. He's a camp there. The lady also, she was flabbergasted when I told her that I think they murdered him.
Why do you think they've murdered him?
Because why will he go onto a bus? They've got his ID.
What about his car? Who's
and
got that?
Got his car.
They've got his car.
I've yes. got his car. I've got the registration number. Yeah.
Who's driving around in
Martin this? Martin Hendricks. He works for the Metro Police. And he's manipulating.
What's his connection with the family then?
He is Chandra's boyfriend.
Chandra's one of the daughters.
The youngest daughter. And she's living in Eldorado Park.
Now, haven't the police questioned him as to how he got the car?
Nothing whatsoever.
Can he prove that he's paid for the car? Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing.
And then they went to...
But this is all... It's all very funny.
Yeah, that's funny. That's the problem. It's funny because then he got this little dog he bought for 500 rand where he was fishing. And he called it Buris. And then somebody told my sister that they poisoned this little dog. So, I mean, why poison the dog?
So you've obviously, I know you've gone and reported your brother missing. Yes. This was the end of last year. Yeah. It's many months ago, nine, 10 months ago.
I've got a case number, everything. But and, not the Moffat View Police Station, not one of them, not one
Did
of
anyone
them
come and take a statement from you? Did anyone?
Yes. Yeah. Stephen Falazzi came to my house. Came to my house on the 14th of January. And he took, but he's not the investigator officer for missing persons. But I was in such a state then, I didn't recognize that this is not the same man. This is not Baloyi. At that point in time, warrant officer Baloyi. I never recognized. I saw this man. But I saw this man when I made the case as missing person at the charge office. Stephen Salazzi.
Is this all over social media? Have you put it up on your Facebook page?
Yes, I've shared.
Who are the pink ladies? I know they've helped you a lot.
They didn't help me. They didn't help me. Nobody ever got in touch with me because of my brother.
There is a missing adult alert.
Yes, that's the only.
And
I put that
his names are Gerhardus
Pietras. But I went to
Hutton,
Yes, I went to an internet cafe and a Nigerian guy by the name of Tony. Put that on for me on Facebook.
And that's it. Yeah. Your brother's disappeared.
My brother's disappeared. And right up to now, 9 months after that, not one word from the police. I phoned the Minister of Police. I phoned his PAs. I phoned this one. I phoned Brigadier's in Pretoria. I phoned Central Police Station Metro in Durban. My son-in-law phoned hospitals, mortuaries, police stations, not
if you one were word. If you were a policeman, where would you start on this case? What should be
well,
done?
Well, if I had a car, I would have gone to Durban first. No, to Eldorado Park,
yes,
where Patricia is buried, because yes. I've got a photo of her tombstone when they posted it, and they can't see. They don't know I can see their WhatsApp. Posted a picture of her tombstone. That tombstone. Now, you want to tell me an undertaker will do an unneat job on a tombstone after a year? That tombstone is not in. That tombstone is just...
But what are you saying about that tombstone?
Well, what I think, I can think what I want, but I cannot say what
but
I want.
But what are you thinking with
what
the tombstone?
What I'm thinking is that they buried him alive in there with that.
No, well, I mean, surely someone would have been witness to the burial.
No.
Buried him alive.
I can show you the picture on my phone.
Well, what does it show on your phone? Because, I mean, they can exhume the bodies. They can open it up and if you have some kind of evidence.
No, what I've
That's
got
a very...
Is,
yeah, forgive
listen
me.
Now,
yeah.
Listen now. Yeah. If I look at my father's tombstone in West Park Cemetery, you have to wait for that ground to sag, okay?
Yes.
Before you put a tombstone.
Absolutely, yeah.
The tombstone, the undertaker that does the tombstone or whoever does the tombstone, does it neatly. This is not... This is... A heap of ground, and it's just put on there.
You think that after her burial, they took your brother and they shoved him? Is this just the...
This is just what I think. I can't say. I can't prove. This is...
Well, after we dealt with Martin...
Come forward, your daughter. Is this your daughter?
This is my daughter.
Yeah, let's talk to your daughter for a second. What's your name?
Delise.
Okay, Delise, you're the daughter of Elise. This is your uncle we're talking about.
Yes.
Why do you think he's been buried... Alive, dead or alive? It must be, we don't know.
Not alive. Yeah. No, I think he's been murdered or hurt somehow. Yeah. Because after we dealt with Martin, all the stories just does not add up at all.
It doesn't add up because someone's got his car and someone's got...
And they lie.
Yes, and I mean...
Then they said
did you know where the money was kept, his no. money? You don't know which bank it was in?
Yes, Absa Bank. I phoned them.
Have you got a bank account number?
No, I got... Nobody
but you've got his ID number.
I've got his ID number.
Could they trace a bank account? I mean, they could see who pulled the money out.
What happened? Because they've got his ID book. And I asked her, when I wanted to put him on Pink Ladies, I said, Chandra, can you forward me the photo of Pete? On his ID book, because you've got his ID book. She never wanted to. She never wanted to. Angie, I took a photo of 20 years ago of my brother to Moffat View Police Station. But my brother has gone so thin because of this diabetic attacking his pancreas.
My darling, I understand. Let's just get to the... Let's try and get some kind of evidence going here.
Okay, I will explain.
Yeah, please. Okay. Yeah. This is your daughter, Delise. Yeah.
My uncle borrowed a lady money, 10,000 rand.
He lent her money.
Yes, it was his wife's friend, Lundy. Yeah. She's also a police officer, captain.
Not my uncle. His wife borrowed her the money.
Yes. Well, yeah.
She passed away.
Yeah.
Then the daughter, Angie, phoned after Pete was missing, and she said to my mother, Auntie Ilza, can you please come speak to Lundy because she doesn't want to give us the money, and we want to use the money to go and look for Pete in Durban.
Yes.
So my mom got the money from her.
But only 2,000 rand because my brother and this woman had an agreement to pay
monthly.
Him back.
There's just one question I need to know as a lawyer. Where the bank account number at APSA, did you say APSA?
Yes.
APSA. Can you get that bank account number?
No. Because
if you took his ID book and his numbers to the...
I don't have his ID book.
Do you not know his ID number?
I know that his work now eventually.
Surely you can get it from his employer.
Yes, his employer gave it to me now.
So you could go to APSA and say, can we just trace this bank account?
What I did is I phoned APSA because I've got a friend of my husband.
Yeah.
Or my ex-husband, but I'm looking after him because he had a stroke.
Yeah.
I've got a friend of him, Bella de Magalash. He used to be a manager at UK in APSA.
Yeah.
I phoned him and I said to him, Bella, if I give you Pete's ID number, can you tell me this if there's any account? He said to me, there's an account, but it's not a normal savings account. It's a fixed deposit, but there hasn't been movement on this account as from, I think it was April 2015. Then he said to me, we are going to block this account. That's the only account I know of.
The account is blocked.
Yes.
And no one is pulling money out of the account.
No.
But the other APSA account, there was another one. That was his record.
Yeah, and is there action on that account?
We don't know.
We've got no idea.
This is absolutely, I mean, God forbid it's anyone's sibling, brother or sister, that somebody disappears like this, never to be seen again. Yeah, it's crazy.
What they told me is that when they put him on the bus, they've got his car, they've got his ID. When they put him on the bus, he had, I don't know how many thousands of rand. But when he came to Durban, this is now what they say. When he came to Durban, he went to Central Metro Police Station and he found Chandra.
Yeah.
And he said to Chandra, don't you want to put in money for me? Then a Captain Kruger took the phone out of his hand and said, this is not a public phone. And he banged the phone down in his ears. Yeah. My son-in-law phoned Central Police Station and said to him, tell me, how can a man, Kruger, this is an ill man, how can a captain of Metro Police Station say, this is not a public phone? They said, no, there's no such captain working here. These people are lying to you. These people are lying.
There's an inquest act. In other words, when somebody's died, they have an inquest if they don't know who murdered that person or how they died. They have what they call an inquest where people go and give evidence and they say, I last saw him there or I this and that. And then the magistrate can make a finding to say there's evidence that so-and-so could have been involved in the death, etc. You don't have to have a dead body in order to have an inquest. And the Inquest Act provides that if there is an allegation of death occurring from other than natural causes. So if you've got reason to believe that the person died and it wasn't a natural death, then the police have got the right to go and take statements from everyone. In fact, not the right, the obligation to take a statement from everyone who may know or may have some evidence concerning that person. I don't know whether they've taken statements from all the children involved, why the person is driving his
what
car.
What happened is when
it's outrageousness, yeah.
When I went to, when Baloyd came to me and he said he's working with a case, he never came to my flat, in my flat. Yeah. He took me to Angie in Forest Hill, in Napier Street. I think it's 71 or 77. I went there with Warrant Officer Baloyi at that point in time. I believe he had he's now colonel or something, I don't know what.
Yeah.
Then, I never mentioned Martin's name. I didn't know about this Martin. I never mentioned his name. Then he brought me home and he went back to the police station. But I didn't know. He went back to Angie. When I walked all the way from Townsview to Moffat View Police Station to hear what's going on with my brother, I nearly passed out because of the heat. There's no taxi going there. When I came there, he said to me, but Martin said that your brother is on drugs. I said, but I never mentioned Martin's name to you. So how do you know Martin?
Mm.
Who told you about Martin?
Ladies,
and my brother's not on drugs.
This is a very, very sad case. It really, really is. And I'm not just saying it because you're sitting here. It's tragic that you lose a brother and nothing gets done about it in today's times. I know you said you phoned the police. You've done. You sent emails? Have you got a track of some of stuff you've done here?
I can't send emails. I don't have emails.
Section 205 of the Criminal Procedure Act, for people listening, provides that a magistrate may take evidence if somebody makes a case and says somebody needs to be subpoenaed to come and give evidence, for example, as to why they're driving the car.
Jeez.
Of your brother.
You know what?
That section is something that the police could use, section 205. I would like to see statements from people. You'll find that somebody will talk eventually. Somebody driving the car must have some evidence of how they got the car. That's all I want to know.
I want to say something, but I don't want to mention a name. I don't want to get this person. But somebody phoned me and said to me, Ilza, go and get your brother's car because I see Martin driving with your brother's car in Forest Hill, Turfontein, and this was a month ago.
Yeah.
But he said we must go and report it to it.
Yeah, well, you need to pursue this, my darling. I'm
when
sorry.
When I got Angie in the street, also about a month ago, she said, I said to her, hey, you know what, Chandra is sitting in my brother's car nicely, eh? She said, that night, the picture went off her WhatsApp. Then she said to me, Auntie Ilza, you know what? We discussed. Let's sell all Pete's stuff because his furniture has also been taken out of his place. When I said, Martin, he said, I'm storing the furniture. I said, can you forward me a storage slip? Up to today, I'm still waiting.
Yeah. It's Magni Sini, Susan Say, and something's got to be done about this.
But then she said to me, we had a discussion. Let's sell all the stuff and give the money to you.
It's all nonsense. What should happen is that there should be formal statements taken by the police from each and every person.
Yes.
Okay, in the family that knew him. All we want to do is if they have no knowledge and they are clear, let them tell us in a statement. But if not, I want to see every statement taken by somebody who has any part of him, either in the form of his car or in the form of his money or his bank account, all that kind of stuff. Until then, and I'm sure there are people listening that are going to send us emails. As we do last week, we have people that are in today after you walk out. They're going to be talking about a product that's terrific. And they listened to our show and they sent us information.
Can I just say a last thing here? Then that day I said to you, you know what, Angie?
Yeah.
If you think that money is going to stop me from looking for my brother, you're making one hell of a
business. No, you'll never give up. It's part of you. He's your brother. He's your blood. Of course you can't.
I want my brother.
I understand. We all understand. Our hearts go out to you. Thank you for coming in and sharing this with Cliff Central and the Laws of Life and myself. We wish you well. You're very tearful and you're very emotional. We appreciate it. We're going to let you go and we're going to catch up with you and see how you progress with this one. Section 205 of the Criminal Procedure Act and the Inquest Act. You can contact me afterwards and I'll give you the information. Okay, God bless you, all three of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is CliffCentral.com.